So this morning is February 28th, and we're learning Parshat Teshuvah. This week's Parsha is Parshat Tetzaveh. And Parshat Tetzaveh is the second of the many Parshiot in the Book of Shemot, Book of Exodus, that talk about the construction, the building of the Mishkan, the Tabernacle. I thought quite a while what I should teach in Parshat Tetzaveh, and I came to the conclusion I didn't have anything that would really be meaningful and relevant to the people around the table. So I said, we'll go back to Parshat Mishpatim. In the matters of the Mishkan, that is, Truma and Tetzaveh, I didn't find anything. So we're going back to Mishpatim, which is just full of mitzvot. We could have classes the whole year on Parshat Mishpatim. There's lots of interesting and relevant and important things there. What we're going to do in Parshat Mishpatim is what's called in Hebrew Haba B'Machteret, in English, the thief who breaks and enters. There are two verses there in Parshat Mishpatim. And the truth is, I see everyone's been opening the Chumash. I'm now going to ask not to look. Well, don't have to close it. Don't look at the English. Because every single translation I saw, because translations have to explain, they make a decision how to translate. But the truth is that the Hebrew is quite amorphous. And I gave a translation here at the top of the sheets I gave out that I didn't find in any other place. I purposely left it exactly as Hebrew. It's completely ambiguous. What it says is, if the thief be found breaking in, it's the first two verses of chapter 22 of Shemot, if the thief be found breaking in and be smitten such that he dies, he has no blood. If the sun has risen upon him, he has blood. That's all it says. And the three dots I put there because the verse continues, but it continues on a different subject. I really am not leaving anything out. Even at the end of the class, there's no further information from the verses we're going to bring. That's all that it says.
Shalem is not part of that?
No, it's not really part. Because it doesn't, Shalem Yishalem doesn't relate to what... this is talking about some type of smiting in blood. Shalem Yishalem is if there is no blood, then he has to pay for what he stole. In this case, he didn't steal, he died. So that's a different part of the scenario. If the thief be found breaking in, be smitten such that he dies, he has no blood. If the sun has risen upon him, he has blood. Now, although there's a lot of ambiguities there, the truth is that the basic scenario is not unclear. It's actually pretty clear. Uh-huh. A thief comes in, breaks into your house, and be smitten so that he dies. That verb, be smitten, is in the passive. It doesn't say who killed him. But clearly the most common scenario is going to be that the householder killed him. He dies. He has no blood. The question is, what does it mean he has no blood?
Blood guilt.
Okay, so one possibility is blood guilt. Now, if it's talking about blood guilt, then you're making an assumption as to who is the... he that has no blood guilt. Who is the he?
The hitter, the killer.
The killer who's the householder. Right? That's certainly possible. It makes a lot of sense that blood means there's no blood guilt. If the householder killed the thief while the thief was in the process of breaking and entering, the householder is absolved of any liability and any culpability, meaning he was allowed to kill the person. That makes perfect sense. The only problem with that interpretation...
just to him? For him.
What does it say to him?
In the first verse.
His.
Oh, yeah.
If there is
son. And he dies, there's not for him blood. So wouldn't that refer to the thief?
Why do you think that it refers to a thief? I'm not saying you're wrong.
Right.
You're disagreeing with Sam. Okay, that's right. Fine. You're allowed to disagree with Sam. But what brings you to disagree?
Well, I don't see that. I don't think you're forced to say that it's the householder.
Okay. But why is... do you think it's better to say what you're saying? Better or worse? Is there any indication of the verse?
Well, I would say... the reason I would say that it was him is because... the person who's breaking in.
Yeah.
It's better to say that the blood would be upon him because he's committing the wrong act to begin with. and he would have a certain responsibility for the consequences of the act.
But if it means blood guilt, yeah, it means responsibility for killing. Now, who killed whom? Clearly the thief is the one that was killed.
But if he breaks in and it leads to his own death,
yeah,
then it's all part of one act that he's responsible for.
Then it says he has no blood. Means he has no blood guilt? The thief has no guilt?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense. The thief should have guilt.
He's guilty. Well,
but that's when the sun rises. So
No. It says he has no blood. Ein lo damim.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's the other way. The owner was killed.
No.
It says that the thief was killed.
I think it's, if somebody in the night, you don't know who it is, and you're threatened. But during the day, you can see him.
Okay.
And you can,
great. We'll get to that in a second, but I want to stay with the first issue. Let me define it better. The first verse. If the thief be found breaking in and be smitten such that he dies, certainly the thief dies. He was killed. And it doesn't say who killed him, but we can assume in most cases the householder that killed him. Although, again, the householder is not mentioned. He has no blood. What does it mean he has no blood? It doesn't say, who is the he that has no blood? Sam says it's the thief that has no... He says the householder that has no blood. Right. And blood means no blood guilt. And that's a fine interpretation. And the truth is that you can look in Rashbam's commentary. Sam said exactly what the Rashbam said. The Rashbam is the grandson of Rashi. We're in northern France in the 11th century. The end of the 11th century. And the Rashbam, Rabbi Shmuel ben Meir, says he has no blood. One who kills him has no blood guilt and is not liable exactly like Sam said, and everything is fine, except for the fact that this interpretation is quite unlikely because it adds into the sentence a subject that's not there. The explanation we just heard is he has no blood, referring to the householder.
Right.
The problem is the householder is not mentioned in the verse.
I guess that's what I was trying to.
I thought you were trying to say it. I'm trying to get you to say it, but you didn't say it.
Well, yeah, because then I got confused. But yeah,
right. And therefore, Jim.
But look how broadly the word is. He be smitten such that he dies, which you can conclude that he accidentally dies, that he falls down the stairs and dies.
No, he be smitten. Smitten is my translation of the Hebrew. That means to smite. He was hit by someone.
Somebody hit him.
But someone hit him.
Could have been the wife.
So he dies.
It says
he
dies.
It doesn't say, and he dies.
It
kills him.
It says, and he dies.
No, that's what it means. That's what it means. That someone killed him so that he dies. Now, what I'm trying to say is that since, on the one hand, the interpretation of the Rashbam and of Sam, I don't know who had said it first, is a very, very legitimate reading, and it makes sense, except for the fact that it adds a subject into the verse that's not there. If we want to try and say something closer to the pshat, something closer to the simple reading, we'd have to say that the he, who has no blood, is the same subject that's been mentioned from the beginning, who is the thief. So it would mean that the thief, who was breaking in, and he was killed and he died, the thief has no blood. If you're saying the thief has no blood, then blood cannot mean blood guilt. It has to mean something else.
Isn't the mim also a money?
Yeah, but in this case, what do you mean there's no money? Who's talking about money? The interpretation would have to be, and see it in Rashi here, right above the Rashbam, he has no blood. It is not murder to kill the thief, since for all intents and purposes, he's a dead man. In other words, he has no blood means the thief had no blood, and therefore the person who killed him was not a murderer. What do you mean he had no blood? He forfeited his life by the actions that he's doing.
That's
he put
true.
His life at risk, and he should have known that his life can be taken with impunity because of what he was doing, and therefore the thief has no blood, which means... In the end, the same thing as the previous interpretation. It comes to the same place, that the person who killed, the householder who killed the thief, is not responsible. Either say it's worded in the sense that the householder has no blood guilt, or it's worded in the sense that the thief has no blood in him. The result is that the householder is not considered to have done an act that would bring him to be culpable for the death penalty. Okay? That's what it means.
It's interesting how this is related to the present day question about the U.S. as to when you can kill an intruder.
He has to be in the house, not on the doorstep.
But previously,
he has to be where?
I photographed in the back, the Texas Castle Domain.
For years,
it's the last three pages.
The rule was the fact that you could only kill him if you felt that you yourself were in danger of a physical injury. And it's been changed to say that if he does break in, you can kill him. So that's it. So the previous interpretation, the present interpretation is consistent with this.
They read the lawmakers read the Old Testament.
And what Jim is actually saying is... In my mind, Jim is focusing us on the question as follows. If the thief be found breaking in and be smitten such that he dies, and the householder who killed him is not liable, so the question is why? Why is he not liable?
Yes.
He killed someone. Why is he not liable? Because the person was breaking in. Does that mean the thief's life is less valuable than the television set he was about to steal?
Isn't it?
So says Ilana, there's a rule that he who comes to kill you, kill him first. Mm-hmm. Was the thief coming to kill?
It doesn't say that. I think you can presume that.
Perhaps you can presume that. That's exactly the question on the table. Right. Let me put it in a different fashion. Why is the householder allowed to kill the thief? He's allowed, but why? Is it because somehow the plasma television is more valuable than the thief's life? Or is it because the presumption that a thief who enters comes to kill?
Right.
Two possible ways of looking at it here. And these will have legal implications. Because if we say it's only because the thief has a presumption, we presume he's going to kill, then what happens if he's wearing a sign that says, I'm not here to kill?
You can't see that at night. But if the sun rises, I see
it. So that brings us to the question night and day. Let's switch now to the new issue. When this all comes together in the end. The second verse says, if the sun has risen upon him, he has blood. So first of all, the easy question, he has blood. Who has blood? Well, it depends on what we said earlier. Either it means the householder has blood guilt, or it means that the thief has blood, which means that the householder has blood guilt. However you parse it exegetically, it comes to the same place practically. It means that the householder is guilty.
Well, why would he have blood in the day and not in the night?
Ah.
Well,
very good.
He can see him, and he can. He has the obligation to say, what are you doing here?
Okay, so let's base ourselves on this right now. The assumption that Sue made was that the verses are making a distinction between day and night. And that's a good assumption, but I just want to point it out, it's not the only way of reading it. The way Sue reads it is as follows. If the thief be found breaking in, and be smitten such that he dies, he has no blood. If the sun has risen upon him, he has blood. And since the second verse says the sun has risen upon him, then Sue assumes that the first verse is the sun has not risen. As the first verse was about night, the second verse was about day.
I would read it differently.
And it's possible to read it differently, yeah?
That he was hit, but he didn't die until the sun rose. I mean, he was just hit partially.
He was in a process.
She's got a good imagination.
No, he has blood.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you can expand it and say, you know, if today you can turn on an electric light and the lights, and it could be sun.
Okay, let's base ourselves on that. Let me show you on the second page, that is to say the back of the first page in the sources, the bottom of the page, I wrote the Rashbam, again the Rashbam. Again, it's the same Rabbi Shmuel ben Meir, the grandson of Rashi. And he says what Sue said. I don't know if Sue said it first or the Rashbam said it first. Right. He says, what is breaking in? At night, if the sun has risen, meaning that he was stealing during the day. At the bottom of the back of the first page. Mm-hmm. And that is also said by the Ramban, by the Ibn Ezra. By the way, I'll just show you. I'll take a parenthetical moment, the traditional medieval commentators on the Torah and also on the whole Tanakh, whether it's Rashi, the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, the Rashbam, Sforno, and a number of others, they're found in what's called the Mikrot Gedolot. Right? The Mikrot Gedolot. Mm-hmm. Mikrot Gedolot, which is an anthology that brings every verse, and on the same page, the commentators around it. The Jewish Publication Society embarked on a project a few years ago to translate the Mikrot Gedolot on the Torah into English, which is a pretty bombastic project. That's a big thing. They put out two volumes so far. This is the first one that came out on Exodus. And it looks like this. It's laid out like a traditional Mikrot Gedolot. The verse on the top, here in Hebrew, here in English. And then the commentators around.
Just like the Talmud.
Correct, just like the Talmud. What they did here, they have the Hebrew and an English translation, not just one English translation, but two English translations. Just like in the traditional Mikrot Gedolot, there's the translation into Aramaic.
Two translations also.
In some of them, too. Here it's into English. So this is pretty good. Of course, it's impossible in English translation to get all the nuances of the medieval Hebrew, so a lot is lost. But if you don't know Hebrew, then this is a good volume to have to get used to the way traditionally Jews learn
or simpler,
Tanakh.
Study Hebrew.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's simpler. Depends. So, the Rashbam says like Sue, let me read to you what the Rav Yosef Bechor Shor says. He's a medieval commentator from the Balei HaTosfot, means from the students of the grandchildren of Rashi. So we're moving into the middle of the 12th century here. We're in northern France in Ashkenaz. Yosef Bechor Shor, his commentary is found in none of the traditional Mikrot Gedolot. It's a separate book. It was printed in a modern Mikrot Gedolot that Bar Ilan University put out just 20 years ago. So he writes, if the sun has risen upon him, that he left his breaking in and went outside to the place of the shining of the sun. In other words, it's not about day and night, it's about location. The sun doesn't shine inside, it shines outside. For him, the sun risen means he went outside. Now, I want to point out a very significant difference between the Rashbam and most of the commentators on the one hand, and Bechor Shor on the other hand. If we go back to the verse, at the beginning of the sheet, it's as follows. If the thief be found breaking in and be smitten such that he dies, he has no blood. If the sun has risen upon him, he has blood. Says Sue and most of the commentators, that if the second verse says, if the sun has risen upon him, then the first verse must be the sun has not risen upon him. Nighttime. Fine. The Bechor Shor says no. The Bechor Shor says that if the second verse says the sun has risen upon him, it doesn't mean that the first verse is the sun has not risen. Rather, the sun has risen upon him is the
opposite of machteret.
Thank you. Is the opposite of breaking in. If he was found breaking in other words, breaking in the house, then he's killed, he has no blood. If he was found breaking out, sun has risen upon means found breaking out, in other words, on his way out, already outside, then he does have blood. So the sun has risen upon him is not the opposite of sun has not risen, it's the opposite of breaking in.
Because if he's leaving, then you understand his intention wasn't to murder.
I hear what Adam said? Adam just said it, right?
What?
The Bechor Shor is making an assumption that the reason you're not to kill him when he's breaking in is because you're in fear of your life. Once he's breaking out,
your life is saved.
Your life has been saved. Therefore, you can't kill him. So the Bechor Shor has a very nice and logical way of reading it, but the Rashbam also has a logical way of reading it.
And a Texan.
Yeah, well, let's talk all about the Texas law now.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, he has another thing.
So let's go back for a second.
His name is connected with bulls. Bechor Shor.
Bechor Shor means an ox.
Born of the ox.
A cowboy.
So let's just make sure we understand the principle according to Sue, according to the Rashbam, that at night you're allowed to kill him, in the daytime you're not. Right. It seems pretty clear. In the daytime, you're not in fear of your life. Perhaps because you know he wouldn't kill you, because he's going to be seen, or perhaps it's just that the householder is less in fear. That's the same thing I'm saying. The householder is less in fear in the daytime, but at nighttime he doesn't know what's happening. He could be suddenly killed by a hidden weapon. So things are much more dangerous at night. That's why if you kill him, you're not culpable, but in the daytime you're not allowed to kill him, and if you do, you have blood.
I have a support for Bechor Shor. Until kind of modern windows with glass, inside of homes, it was not that light.
Yeah, good point.
Look, there's so many subtleties now. If it's during the day and he's broken in, but you come in, but you're outside and come in after he's broken in, he's not breaking in, he's already there, so you're not allowed to kill him.
Really?
No, no, I don't. No, you're saying according to this?
No. It said if you find him breaking in.
Oh, so you're assuming it means the process of breaking in. I think we can assume it means inside, is it?
No, that's not what it says.
You're reading according to the Bechor Shor or the Rashbam?
And what if he's a four-year-old?
That's a good question. That brings us right to the next source.
Oh, they're all so fascinating. And a question, you know, they raise it. Oh, they're all so fascinating. If he's on the roof, he's on the courtyard.
How did you know? That's the next page. That's the next page.
It's a journey.
So let's look now at the next source I brought on the first page, which is the Babylonian Talmud Tractate Sanhedrin, page 72a, right? That's really where you have the concentration of the sages of the Talmud dealing with this particular set of two verses. First, we bring the Mishnah, and the Mishnah, of course, is the codification of the tradition in the year 200 of the Common Era. And what it says about our matter of the thief who breaks in is very, very small. In Hebrew, it's six or seven words. It says, he who comes and breaks in is judged. In Hebrew, al shem sofo. My English translation, on account of his end. He who comes and breaks in is judged on account of his end. Now, end in the sense of what's going to come out of this. What his intention is. What could result. The Gemara explains, the Gemara is the commentary on the Mishnah. The Gemara, this is the Babylonian Gemara, the one that's written by Babylonian rabbis in the 3rd, 4th, and 5th centuries of the Common Era.
So this Mishnah is basically saying, we can't know his intention until the end. So we've been making an assumption about if he's in, then we're assuming his intention is to kill.
Well, see what the Gemara says. Oh, you're right in the right direction. Rava said, Rava is a Babylonian Amora. Amora means a rabbi of the period of the Gemara. What is the reason for the law of breaking in? Because it is certain that no man is inactive, is passive, where his property is concerned.
Right.
That means that the householder, we can expect, is going to put up a fight. Therefore, this thief must have reason, does reason to himself before he decided to become a thief. If I go there, the owner will oppose me and prevent me. Literally, he won't let me go. And if he does, I will kill him. And the Torah prescribes, he comes to slay thee, arise and slay him first.
Exactly.
But that's different.
I don't know who said it first, Rafa or Ilana. So
I'm slightly older.
Let's point out what's going on here. The Gemara assumes, it's a given, it's not a matter of law, it's not a matter of recommendation, it's a given that the householder is usually going to protest, usually going to do something, usually trying to prevent the thief from getting away with his plasma television or whatever it might be, with his refrigerator. And the thief knows that that's what people do. They put up a fight. And the thief nevertheless decided to become a thief and do what he's about to do. Therefore, the thief was willing to do this, even knowing that he might end up in a violent confrontation. And still the thief decides to do this, which means the thief ultimately has in his mind the possibility of killing the householder. All that is behind the law, says Rava. That's what the Mishnah meant when he says he's judged on account of his end. His end is murderer. The thief's end, his potential, his intention is to murder. And therefore, the householder is allowed to kill him first based on the rule, He who comes to slay thee, arise and slay him first. Which means, going back to discussions we had 15 minutes ago, that according to Rava, explaining the Mishnah, explaining the verse, the reason the house soldier is allowed to kill is because, and only because, the householder's life is considered to be threatened. If it had been otherwise, then you would not be allowed to kill, even to save your plasma television.
Bob. If that's the case, and the sun rises, and so he comes in, and it's the first one where he comes in during the daytime.
The second one,
he comes in during the daytime. Would he not expect the homeowner then to know that he's in and put up the fight?
Exactly.
But if he comes in at night, wouldn't the thief expect the homeowner to be asleep and therefore not being threatening to life?
Okay.
Oh.
Very good.
But you could say it differently, though.
You could say the opposite.
You could say that he's coming in at night because he assumed that the homeowner is defenseless and easier to kill.
But it's still a thief. A thief is different than a murderer.
Right.
And so, I mean, the verse says it's a thief. So the thief is not interested in killing anyone. The thief is interested in stealing.
First and foremost, in stealing.
That's what he's trained in. He's not trained in killing. He's trained in thieving.
He has PhD in stealing.
Right. So
it doesn't say the homeowner. It says if anybody finds a thief.
We'll get to that also. So Bob made a statement based on a logical direction. I first want to go into logical direction and then see the statement that Bob made. I shouldn't say logical direction. I should say, how should I call it? A thought process. That's a thought process. The thought process that Bob is telling us that we must engage in is to now connect between what Rava says in the Gemara on the one hand, and on the other hand, the difference between verse A and verse B, between the no blood and yes blood. We have to make now the correlation. If the foundation of the permission of the householder to kill is based upon the supposition that the thief was a potential murderer, then it would seem that the difference between no blood and yes blood is exactly that. That in one case he's a potential murderer, in one case he's not. So it means that we're being told that in verse A, which is verse 1, when you're allowed to kill him, that must be a case in which we assume he's a murderer, potential murderer. The case where it says the sun has risen upon him, he has blood, meaning that you can't kill him, must be a case in which we assume that he's not a potential murderer. And now how does it work itself out? Bob said it seems to him that it doesn't work itself out. So let's think. So to work it out, we have to base ourselves on the two different interpretations of the difference between verse 1 and verse 2 that we saw. One was Sue and the Rashbam, the other was Bechor Shur and Ilana. So which, but let's work it out. If we're going with Sue's interpretation, which is the Rashbam and the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra, that the difference between the two verses is day and night, or I should say night and day. So in the nighttime, you're allowed to kill him. How does everything fit together? Well, it must be the following. That a thief, if he comes at night, he knows your home. And houses in those days don't have 5 stories and 3 wings. It's 1 or 2 rooms. If the thief goes to steal your plasma television, you're sleeping in the same room. He knows that you're there, and he knows you're going to get aroused, and he knows there's going to be a fight. And he's willing to go in for the fight because he wants the television. In other words, if it's at the nighttime, you can assume he's coming to kill you. Coming to kill you doesn't mean that he wants to kill you. It means he's willing to kill you.
Yeah.
And since he's willing to kill you, you can kill him. Whereas if it's the daytime, this is what Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam and the Ramban and Sue would say, if it's in the daytime, he thinks there's no one home. Mm-hmm. He's not coming for a fight. Mm-hmm. He has no intention at all of killing. And therefore, if someone does happen to catch him, he very well will flee. And therefore, you can't kill him because it's not about any danger to human life. That's the way, probably, again, the Rashbam would read it. But if you go with Bechor Shur, it's a bit different.
It makes no sense. What about the women and the children?
It always makes sense. Well, you just need to sort
Are they not at home at night? At daytime?
I don't know if they're home at daytime, but the thief is probably pretty sure that they wouldn't put up a fight.
Or he knows right? that the children are at school, and the, you know, there can be lots of
things. You got four cell phones. At night, you can't see if he has a gun or a knife or something.
Yes, right.
It's uncertain as to what he's going to be doing at night. At the
it's
daytime,
different when you see.
When he breaks in, you can see him. You can see if he's a 4-year-old or a 50-year-old or a 7-foot man, and if he has a knife or not. So during the daytime, then you have to use your judgment. At nighttime, when anybody breaks in, you're unsure of what's happened, so you can.
It's much right. more scary.
It's much more scary, and it's yeah. much more likely to develop into a violent confrontation in the right. in the nighttime.
Yeah.
But now let's think about the Bechor Shor, who doesn't divide between day and night. He divides between in and out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think it makes more sense.
Yeah.
So let's see why, if when he's in, whether it's day or night, it doesn't matter day or night according to Bechor Shor. If he's in, you're allowed to kill him.
Because if he's in, he'll put a fight. He's ready for a fight no matter what.
Okay. Whereas if he's out already, the thief is not thinking of killing.
He would run with the murder.
He's just running away.
The whole thing is really around the perception of the homeowner, not around... Because you don't really know what the thief is doing there. You don't know he's a thief.
What do you think he's come to study?
Yeah, but it's not just the perception of the homeowner. It's the halakha's perception of the thief's intention. And of course,
you can't know the thief's intention until after he's
come
done
no, but we have to make a halachic, a legal presumption of the thief's intention in order to decide side with the Lord.
But isn't that what the Mishnah is saying? Is that
exactly.
You know his intentions by what he ends up doing if he gets out?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, we're making an assumption of his end already at the beginning. We're assuming
right.
that a thief when, who comes
at night or in, he's coming to kill.
Right.
Or he's coming willing to kill. But if
right.
he's left already, then you assume that he's...
Right, according to the Bechor
right.
Shor. So it's not about the homeowner's assumptions, it's about the thief's.
But but you can only function based on what the homeowner's assumptions are.
That's, in other words, the halakha
right.
is making assumptions concerning the thief's intentions, and the halakha is assuming that the thief makes his intentions on the basis of the thief's assumptions concerning the homeowner's activity.
Right.
I think it's really clear. A thief walks in there, day or night, the woman in the house would be there in the day, there's not proper intention. He's on the property, that's pretty clear.
You can kill him.
If he's fleeing, totally different.
That's
story.
The Bechor Shor.
That's the way the law really
yes.
is.
That's what the Bechor Shor says.
And
okay.
They use the word thief.
And that they use the word exactly.
So if you say a man walks in, or a woman walks in.
A man walks in, he could be in there to borrow some sugar.
Or a 4-year-old walks in.
But how do you know what he's there for?
The word here says thief. It doesn't say man or child or...
And that puts...
He's a name tag,
that
thief.
That really clarifies.
On his name tag, it says thief.
Well, you know what?
And so you mentioned in the day you can see or you can't... I mean, so it's a knife in his pocket. I mean, you can't necessarily see.
Mm-hmm.
But the word
he's
thief.
There with the wrong intent.
So, all right.
I like the next one about the sun rising on it.
It breaks in. What if the door is open?
That's a very good
totally
question.
That's an imitation.
I think it goes back.
Or if the door is unlocked.
It goes back to the intent.
No.
If
no.
somebody, you think somebody's there to kill you, you have the right to kill him first.
Okay,
that's the whole basis.
But again,
of
everyone's system. Saying their opinions, but we want to figure out what the verse's opinion is.
The verse's
right?
opinion. You're right.
So let's go on now in the Talmud.
All right.
We're in the. It says Babylonian Talmud, Tractate Sanhedrin, page 72a to 72b.
Right.
This is complicated, so I've decided let's read it in the opposite order of which it is written.
Oh.
Let's read it from line 4. The middle of line 4 says another Breita taught. Do you see that place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Breita means a source from before the year 200. That is nevertheless not part of the Mishnah. So it's from the same period as the Mishnah, but it's not within the Mishnah. It's a parallel source from before the year 200. And it says as follows. If the sun has risen upon him, he has blood. That's a quote from our verses, right?
Yes.
It's pretty clear. And says the writer, says the commentary, now did the sun rise upon him alone? Of course not, the sun rises on every human being. So what the Bright is pointing out is there's something difficult in the wording of the verse. The verse says, if the sun has risen upon him. Why did it say upon him? Why didn't it just say if the sun has risen? Mm-hmm. And therefore, from the addition of those seemingly superfluous words, the Bright is going to say that if the sun has risen doesn't have anything to do with the sun in the sky. It's something else. It's a metaphor for something. And we know it's a metaphor because of the words upon him. What is it? Let's go and read it. I'll read the whole Bright again. Another Bright taught, if the sun has risen upon him, he has blood. Now did the sun rise upon him alone? But if it is as clear to thee as the sun that his intentions are peaceable, do not slay him. Otherwise, slay him. In other words, it has nothing to do with day and night.
Kind of kashemish butsulai bubble.
Right. Yeah. Rather, it's a metaphor.
Which means?
Like the sun at noon, clear as the sun.
Thursday.
It's a metaphor that means if the sun is risen upon, in other words, if it's clear to the householder that his intention is peaceable, that's when there's blood, meaning that if you kill him, you're culpable. And we should therefore, of course, understand, apparently according to the Talmud, that the previous verse was a case in which it's not clear like the sun that his intentions are peaceable. Rather, you don't know. And therefore, according to the Talmud, we've come to the following conclusion. Verse 1 is a case in which the sun has not risen upon him, meaning
we're not clear
what his intention is. When it's not clear what his intention is, you're allowed to kill him. If the sun has risen upon him, meaning the intention is clear and he's not come to kill you, then you're not allowed to kill him. Now, let me say something that's going to slightly modify something I said just 2 minutes ago. The following is not clear as far as the Talmud's intention. Is the Talmud saying that the phrase, if the sun has risen upon him, is completely and only a metaphor for clarity? Or is the Talmud saying that in addition to the basic meaning that sun means daytime, it's also a metaphor for clarity? Is it only a metaphor or also a metaphor? It's not clear. That will turn out to be a serious disagreement between the Rambam and the Ra'avad that we'll get to in another 10 minutes. But at this point, we don't know. All we know is the Talmud says that it's about clarity or lack of clarity. And just to say it once again, if there's clarity that he's not going to kill you, you can't kill him. But in every other case, you're allowed to kill him. In other words, it means that in 99% of the cases, I mean to say the gray cases, the householder gets the benefit of the doubt. The householder is allowed to kill. I guess we should call this a liberal. Do we call it liberal or conservative?
Conservative.
Well, it's what the conservatives would say, but it's a liberal reading of the verse.
Yes.
Right.
It seems to me that, how would you know? I don't know. It just seems hard to if we were talking about this in light of a court of law, how would it be clear? How could you demonstrate that it was clear to you what his intentions were?
Well, again, I'm allowed to kill him when his intentions are not clear.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm only not allowed to kill him when his intentions are clear.
But it's just you.
You're the only one.
You're the only one there.
Testifies as to what you thought.
Right.
Because the other guy's dead.
So, therefore, if it comes to a court of law and I kill them, mm-hmm. the court will say that this defendant is not guilty, except if the court can determine that the intentions of the thief should have been super clear to the householder, intentions that he didn't intend to kill. How could that be? It could be that the thief was fleeing, mm-hmm. and the householder shot him in the back.
Right.
It could be the thief had him a sign that says, I'm not armed and I don't know how to shoot a gun, and please don't kill me. You know?
Or I'm a 4-year-old.
Or it might have been a four-year-old. And that's pretty close to what the Talmud says. The Talmud says, if it was the father of the householder, then the householder should have known that the thief would never kill his father's don't kill children. But that's just an example.
I don't understand that.
Except at night you don't see that clearly.
Okay, fine. If you didn't see, you didn't see. But let's make it clear that according to this interpretation, we have a very, very, I'll call it a liberal reading, that in all cases of doubt, the householder is allowed to kill. The right. only case where he's not allowed to kill is when he has certainty that the thief is not going
to
kill
beyond
him.
Beyond doubt. Certainty beyond yeah. doubt.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, the deck is stacked in favor of the defendant in that case.
It certainly is. It certainly is. That's exactly the point I'm making.
It seems like it would be pointless to even interpret it that way, because you've removed any possible culpability.
Except for the case of the four-year-old. Or the thief fleeing.
Mm-hmm. So you do whatever you can to save the way around.
Turn it the other way around.
Even with Texas law, if somebody's at your front door and you have a security camera and you see him and he has a shotgun, he's knocking very hard on the door. Are you allowed to shoot through the door with a gun to kill him?
As long as you drag him in the house.
Yeah.
Really? That's the law. As long as you drag him in the house.
Just like it says, if the thief be found breaking in.
You see that he has intention to kill him.
Okay, so Jim brought up earlier, is it only the house or also the courtyard that he's in? We'll get to that in another 5 minutes.
Or the garage.
Or the garage. But before we go there, I want to read the first three lines of this Talmudic passage that we skipped. Okay. And the reason I left them for a second is because they give us a completely different interpretation that has very, very different legal and moral assumptions, and it's not going to be accepted at all. So I want to kind of bracket it, but also point out that it exists. And this other source we're about to read, the first three lines, is the other side of the debate that took place in the Texas legislature when they discussed this, and also every other place is discussed in every court of law and in every legislature in the world, probably. Our rabbis taught the beginning of this passage, Sanhedrin 72a to 72b. If a thief be found breaking in, you see my mistype, I wrote breaking up. If a thief be found breaking in and be smitten such that he die, he has no blood if the sun has risen upon him. Let's stop for a second and notice the very strange way that the Talmudic passage parsed the verse.
Oh.
It parsed it in an impossible fashion. It read it as follows. I'm going back to the top of my sheet where I quoted the verse. If the thief be found breaking in and be smitten such that he dies, he has no blood if the sun has risen upon him, period.
Is it coal marker not in the Torah scroll?
There's no punctuation in the Torah, but that doesn't matter here. Because what the Talmud just did is impossible, because it left the words "he has blood" hanging without any sentence, without any modifier. It's an impossible reading. It's only meant to be a midrash. It's certainly not the pshat. But according to this midrash, we're being told that when does he have no blood? In other words, when are you allowed to kill him? Only if the sun has risen upon him.
That's what Bob said.
In a certain sense, what Bob said. But look what the Talmud does with it. Let's read further. Now, did the sun rise only upon him? In other words, it can't be about sun, about day and night, because then it wouldn't need to say upon him. But this is the meaning. If it is clear to thee, as the sun, that his intentions are not peaceable, slay him. If not, do not slay him. In other words, when are you allowed to slay him? Only when you're certain that his intention is to kill you. If there's any lack of clarity, you can't slay him.
So you have to wait until you're sure, and then it's too late.
Right.
Right. According to this interpretation, the host householder has no right to kill unless he's certain that his life is being threatened. Which means in the gray area, which is 99% of the cases,
your first interview,
you're not allowed to kill. You have to let your television be stolen.
Right.
Of course, you're allowed to break the thief's arm if you can, but you can't kill him. right? So this interpretation, the first interpretation, first mean the second we read, the first one in the sheet, is a very, very different reading of the halakha. Very different reading.
Wow.
But it's not the one that accepted. The one that's accepted is closer to the Texas law, which is that the householder is allowed to defend his property even at the cost of the life of the thief, in all cases except in the case in which it's certain the thief didn't come to kill at all. Okay, we have a few questions left to answer, so let's turn the page. And we won't read the source at the top of the page, we don't have time, but we'll read the second source. And it says, our rabbis taught, if a thief be found breaking in, I made a mistake, I wrote up, and be smitten by any man. The rabbis say by any man. In other words, the verse doesn't say that the thief is killed by the householder. It says he is, in the passive, smitten and dies, which implies that not only the householder is allowed to kill him, but anyone else, by any man. And it says, such that he die, the rabbis learn, by any death wherewith you can sling. You don't have to do it in a certain fashion. You can kill him in any way you want.
May I ask, if you're going to make the assumption that by any man, why couldn't you just make the assumption by anyone?
Same thing.
Is it the same? So a woman would be implied by this?
Absolutely.
Would be implied by
absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
To give us one more chore?
One more chore of not killing.
Since we're being particular. You know.
Now, says the Talmud, the exegesis, and be smitten by any man. Oh, we don't have to read that. I'm sorry, we don't have to read that. So the point is that even a neighbor who comes and sees the thief breaking in is allowed to kill him, again, in order to save life, because we assume that there's a possibility the thief might be dangerous. And it
because
doesn't.
Because Rodef, though. This is Rodef in that case.
No, this is not different than every other case.
Yes.
In other words, it's always. You can call it a rodef, and some sources do, but it's again not that we're certain he's a rodef or pursuer. Rather, we say there's a possibility he's a pursuer, and that's enough to allow us to kill him.
It's only dangerous because sometimes you forget your key and you try to penetrate your home. The neighbor will see you climbing there.
Then there's the intent issue. How's the neighbor going to necessarily know the intent?
That's what happens in the table.
And again, we're saying that in all cases of lack of clarity, you are allowed to act, and you means even
the neighbor.
And again, you're right, there is a lot of danger here. There's danger in any way you phrase the law.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem. Now, Adam brought up the matter of Rodef, which basically says someone who's coming to kill you, you're allowed to kill him. In the case of Rodef, you have to be certain that the person is actually coming to kill you.
Right.
Like if you're in the street and someone waves to you and you shoot him, you can't say, well, I thought that he was waving a gun at me.
Oh.
There has to be a certain certainty.
I thought Rodef.
Wait a second. But when it's in your house, you don't need that certainty. Right? That's the whole point of this law. That the minute someone entered your house, you no longer have to be certain that he's going to kill you in order for you to kill him. The fact that he's there, that creates the legal basis to assume that he might be threatening your life.
I thought Rodef was only with, if you saw someone being pursued by another
someone
person
else
to kill them.
You're right. It's the same principle. I'm just applying it more broadly. It's the same principle. So, let's move on now to something that Jim brought up 15 minutes ago, which is the next source. Babylonian Talmud, Tractate Sanhedrin, page 72b. Our rabbis taught, if a thief be found breaking in, that's the verse, from this I know that law only for breaking in. Whence do we know it if he be found on the roof, in the court, or an enclosure attached to the house, like the garage or the backyard, or the storage facility? From the verse, if the thief be found, implying wherever he is found as thief. I'll explain what it means. The verse could have said, and I'm going back to the verse, if a thief is breaking in, Why did it say is found breaking in? The Talmud says those are superfluous words. They must be there to teach us something else. What it's coming to teach us is it means if a thief be found, and it doesn't matter where he's found. If a thief be found, it could be that he was breaking in, could be he wasn't breaking in, he was just in the courtyard. Wherever you find a thief, even if he's not yet breaking in, the law applies. As in, why did it say breaking in? It said breaking in because most thieves enter by breaking in. Just to give you the normal scenario, but it didn't mean to limit it to that scenario. That's the way this particular passage reads it. And that indeed is the halakha. It doesn't matter where he is on your property, as long as he's entering or has entered your property, there's already assumption that he's willing to kill you and therefore you can kill him. Pretty extensive.
Doesn't that assume the interpretation that we read that before Shor? Doesn't that assume his interpretation that son isn't meant literally, it's meant figuratively?
The Talmud said it's meant figuratively.
Right, that's what I'm saying. What the Talmud's saying here is correct so long as you assume, so long as you're reading this figuratively.
That could be. The Talmud is consistent with itself. In other words, the difference between when you can kill and when you're not is about you're only not to kill him when you're certain that his intentions are peaceful. Any other case?
Then the others who translated it different from him, where he says that they're reading it literally, so they're reading it differently than the Talmud then.
Let's check if you're right.
Okay.
Let's check out. You're saying that if I read the sun literally as day and night, mm-hmm. then what the Talmud just said about courtyard can't be? Why not? Let's say I read it literally as day and night. Okay. So in the daytime, I'm not allowed to kill him. The nighttime, I am. Mm-hmm. And now we're saying the nighttime, when you're allowed, it's even in the courtyard, not just in the house. Mm. What's the thing difficult about that?
Okay.
Right. Okay. We're going to spend the last 10 minutes simply summing everything up by reading the Rambam, Maimonides, and then reading the Ra'avad, who's Rabbi Avram ben David, in his commentary and stricture on Maimonides. So it's at the very bottom of the page. It says, Rambam Mishneh Torah, the Book of Damages, Laws of Thievery, Chapter 9, Halakha 7. And it brings us to the top of the next page. Here are all the laws summarized by the Rambam. And we'll see how he parses the things that were unclear in what we've seen. When a person breaks into a home, whether at night or during the day, license is granted to kill him. If either the homeowner or another person kills him, they are not liable.
We have continued to gloss into your home, the homeowner.
Right.
You're not... this is not applicable to I own a business and it's at night and nobody's there and the thief breaks in and tries to steal the plasma TV from my mm-hmm. place of business. This is all my home and that's assumed, presumed. It's in the Hebrew. It's not in the English translation.
I don't know. It's a good question.
I
don't know.
People always worked in their home.
If you own your business, then you...
I'm not saying what's right or what's wrong. I'm just saying what's applicable. No, and then the other question I had was, this is a person, which is, I understand, but the translation you had was a thief. Mm-hmm. So if we don't understand, if we don't take it to today, that I don't know who you are when you come into my home. But if we take it back when it was one room and it was, you know, and the television is in the same room as you are and you're going to be assumed that you're going to be disturbing the person and waking them up and then he doesn't know and you're startling him, then you may also be presuming that everybody knows who the village thief is. I know who the thief is. He's now in my house. Now I know that he's a dangerous person. I'm going to kill him. Because it says he's the thief, so it sort of presupposes or pre-presumes or whatever that I know that it's a thief found breaking in. It's not a person found breaking in. So there's my two questions: breaking in where, and is it a thief or a person? And these glosses have been.
Okay, so I don't know, but let's try and think about it.
Right.
But I don't want to take up your last few minutes because it sounded like and that may be follow up later or whatever. So I'm
okay.
Sorry
so,
if I've gotten
right.
us too far.
But I'll say what we'd have to do. To work on the question about the business assuming it's a warehouse, well, we'd have to think, what is the reason that in some cases we're allowed to kill, some cases not? If the reason is we're allowed to kill is because we knew that the thief knew that I was home, well, in the case of the warehouse, he probably assumes that I'm not home, I'm not there. So that's the reason to think it might be different in a warehouse. But I'm just guessing on one foot.
And it might have been, you know, thousands of years ago where there's a one-room home. It may be just the opposite today where there's a three-story home and you're sleeping in the upstairs and all you're doing is breaking into the basement.
Could be. It could be. Okay. Right.
And also, 1,000 years ago, people worked out of the home.
Right, like you said.
Okay,
so let me just point out in the Rambam here that he emphasizes whether day or night. That means that he's reading the Talmud to say that it's reading the verse that the sun and not sun is only a metaphor. It has nothing to do with day and night. It's only a metaphor. And what's a metaphor for? As we saw in the Talmud, it's a metaphor for certainty or lack of certainty. Let's read on. The license mentioned above applies to a thief caught breaking in or one caught on a person's roof, courtyard, enclosed area, right, like the Talmud said, whether during the day or during the night. Why does the Torah mention breaking in? Because it is the general practice for thieves to break in at night. So you see that the Rambam in Egypt in the 12th century is bringing faithfully the Talmud and codifying it. Halacha 9. Why did the Torah permit the blood of such a thief to be shed, although he's only attempting to steal money? Because it's an accepted presumption that if the owner arises and attempts to prevent the thief from stealing, the thief will slay him. And thus the thief entering his colleague's house, his fellow's house, to steal is an effective pursuer, rodeif, right? Pursuer, seeking to kill his colleague. Therefore he should be killed whether he's an adult or a minor. Jim?
Jim.
Yes.
Right?
Man.
A man or a woman. If he came into my property, whether day or night, I'm allowed to kill him. Let's go on. If it is clear to the householder that the thief who breaks in will not kill him and instead is only seeking financial gain, it's forbidden to kill the thief. The householder kills him, the householder is considered to be a murderer. In other words, there's only one limited case in which you're not allowed to kill. And that's when there's certainty that he didn't come to kill you. In all other cases, you're allowed to kill him. This is alluded to by Exodus 22:2, which states, if the sun shines upon him, i.e., if it is as clear to you as the sun that he is at peace with you, do not kill him. Therefore, a father who breaks into his son's home should not be killed. The assumption being that the father would never kill his child, the father of the thief. But a son who breaks into his father's home may be killed.
Wow.
Because children might intend to kill their parents, but parents don't intend to kill their children. But again, that's just an example of a type of certainty. Right? Don't take it literally that it only means that. It's an example. But in most cases, when there's not certainty, that's when you're allowed to kill to save your plasma television. And then at the end, the Rambam in Halakha 11 gathers in a number of different halachot whose sources we did not see. Different rules apply with regard to a thief who stole and departed. Now, that sounds like the Bechor Shur, but it's not. The Bechor Shur learned the halakha that if he departed already, you can't kill him from the verses itself, because it read it that the sun has risen upon him to mean that he's outside of the house. The Rambam is not reading like the Bechor Shur.
Yeah.
He's reading like the Talmud. But there's an additional halakha that Rambam learns from someplace else, that once he leaves your property, you can't chase him in the street and kill him by shooting him in the back. You can tackle him and take the television, but you're not able to shoot him. Or one who did not steal was caught leaving the tunnel through which he entered the home. In other words, whether he left the home with the television or without it, you can't kill him. Since he turned his back on the house and was no longer intent on killing its owner, he may not be slain. So the Rambam says, what's my source for all this? It's saying that once he leaves, you can't kill him. Because we assume that once he leaves, his intention would not be to kill you. Okay. That's the Rambam.
But what's that surrounded by other people? He can be surrounded with little children, but it's still, you know, you can have in your household a whole bunch of people.
The assumption is that he wouldn't kill if there are witnesses.
Witness.
There.
It would not be a small challenge, not a legal witness.
I want to end by looking at the Ra'avad, Rav Avram ben David, in his comments on the Mishnah Torah. It's about the following. Remember, the Rambam said it doesn't matter day or night. That has nothing to do with it day or night, because the Rambam read that when the Talmud said that sun upon him means certainty and not certainty, the Rambam read that the Talmud was saying that the word sun is only a metaphor. It has nothing to do with the real sun. It's only a metaphor for clarity. But the Ravad says the Rambam read the Talmud wrong. The Ravad says, I cannot forbear to record my opinion. It seems to me that though the sages interpreted the phrase if the sun has risen upon him metaphorically, this does not invalidate its plain sense. In other words, the Talmud meant it's day and night, and it's also a metaphor for clarity. By day you are not permitted to slay him, only if he steals by night, since the thief knows the owner is at home and comes to kill or be killed. That's the nighttime. But when the thief comes by day, the owner is not usually at home, and it is a hit-and-run affair with him. He will not stay to fight it out, if surprised, but will rather leave the money and run. So the Ravad says that in the nighttime, that's when you're allowed to kill him, because it's clear that he would kill you. And from there, you learn that any other case where it's clear that he would kill you, you're allowed to kill him. But the nighttime first means literally nighttime. The nighttime, you can... I said the opposite, right? Sorry. And the nighttime is when it's clear that he would kill you. And therefore, all the cases of night, meaning that it's not clear what he'll do, you're allowed to kill him. But in the daytime, real day, it's clear that he wouldn't kill you. And from there, the metaphor, the all other cases where it's clear that he wouldn't kill you, you're not allowed to kill him. So the Rabbit is both a metaphor and it's the pshat. According to the Rambam, it's only the metaphor.
So the Ravad found a way to take both varietas and make them work together.
The first varieta that said that in case of lack of clarity, you're not allowed to kill.
Right.
That's not brought to halakha by anyone.
Well, if you basically what the Ravad is saying is that the fact that a thief is in your home during the day is the clarity that you're looking for.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
So in during the day, 98% of the time, you're not going to kill the thief.
Yes.
But at night, you don't have the clarity, so 98% of the time, you are going to kill the thief.
I understand what you're saying. You're right. Okay. You're right. You're right about that. But
okay.
Still, the principle of the first right that in lack of clarity you don't kill, that's not brought by anyone to the halakha.
And that's why the text of Paul was changed. It used to be if you're not clear, you can't kill.
Uh-huh.
Now, even if you're not clear, now if you're not clear, you can kill.
Good.
That's how the text of Paul was changed. So the Texan people are Old Testament scholars, as we all know.
Little did they know it. Okay.
No, they are. They're always happy to be in the